Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slings.
Am I going to get sued?
You got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody. Wow.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson. Never know when there's a hot mic over here.
Never know.
Never know when it's hot. I probably said something stupid before going live. Before. It's going to come back to bite at some point.
Sooner or later, we'll be completely broadcasting, you know, everything we say. It's going to be out there live on YouTube. And we're done.
Sorry for being a few minutes late here on YouTube. I was on Dan Patrick. I was on the Dan Patrick show.
You were. Yeah.
Big time. Pretty big time.
You big time your own show.
I did. For Dan.
For Dan.
For the Big Show. Because he's, you know, the old co-host of the Big Show, the best sports center, the Sunday night sports center, Sam. I don't know if that was a big thing for you over in Ireland, but that was a big thing listening to watching Dan and Keith on Sunday nights. Before Keith went crazy.
No.
But you know. Anyway, good times. We'll hopefully see Dan over at the Super Bowl. But we're here. We're gonna preview the conference championship games a little early here today. So we're doing it on Wednesday instead of Thursday, previewing those games. And then tomorrow we're going to have Jim Nagy on the show to preview the Senior Bowl. Before we get into it, though, need to remind everybody, I saw some of our competitors tweeting out and reminding their followers to go vote.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Damn it.
So the around the NFL guys, I shouldn't even have said their name. The guys.
The other people.
They are, they caught on that they're in this competition.
Damn it.
And so they started tweeting it out. They get big following.
They
so we need to beat them. We need to beat our friends, Greg and
the absolute worst
Mark
thing
and Dan.
That could happen to us is what is an objectively larger podcast realizes that they can do the same thing we've been doing and push their followers to vote for this thing.
Yeah, I mean we're
that's going to sink us.
We're the underdog here. We are the underdog in this situation, and we need the people to rally.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we have a lot of listeners that listen to both podcasts. I think there's a lot of crossover between our audience and their audience. And
sure.
If you are a crossover member, we ask for your vote. We plead for your vote.
Plead.
Even.
Yeah, that's absolutely it.
Over theirs as the underdogs here so that we can catch up to Greg and all of our
friends. We are begging. And remember, we're not above debasing ourselves for your entertainment. We've done it several times. For example, there's a three-frame picture over there on the shelf of me being stiff-armed to the turf and ripping the knees off myself in the process.
We did this for the people.
Right. We did this for your entertainment. There's also a video there of you. You were telling me yesterday about some guy you'd read who was like 45 years old and still throwing 100 miles an hour.
Sure is.
Meanwhile, you've got like a 40-minute warm-up to throw 75.
Yeah.
And we put that on film for the people.
For the people.
We will do more ridiculous things on film for the people. But in order to do that, we need a vote. We need an award. Otherwise, this whole thing might get shut down.
Yeah, we want a real award, not a stolen one. I mean, it's a big thing. So go. Links in the description. Links in Sam's, if you're on Twitter, you know, Sam's pinned tweet.
Yep.
Go check it out. We're going to push it. Because we got this
PFF
last week. It's the last week. If you've already voted, you know, see if your IP address expired so you can go back.
It's not just the last week. There's only like 3-4 days left.
Oh, we just got a few more days. Yeah. And again, I'm still open. If somebody wants to, you know, write a macro for deleting your history and revote, if you want to do that, we're not above that either. Right? If it worked in 09.
Somebody was sort of very upset. They thought that was going too far. It was cheating, was not cricket, as they say.
Yeah.
I would simply say that if that happens, It's got nothing to do with us.
Nothing to do with us.
I would not endorse that. I would also not give the award back if that's how it was won.
I may have just endorsed it, but yeah, whatever. Whatever you got to do. Anyway, we appreciate everybody because we have fun. We have fun hanging out with everybody here. So we already have some predictions in the chat. Chiefs 45, Ravens 3.
Wow.
For a guy with a Mahomes jersey avatar.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's, you know, it's an early.
There might be some bias involved there.
It's an early prediction for the game. So we're going to get in. Let's get into all the games.
Mm-hmm.
You ready to
all
do
two
it?
Of them.
All two of them. Will this take 2 hours?
Probably.
We'll go a little bit quicker today. We might talk a little Jim Harbaugh news. People wanted to know. Did you answer any Shane Waldron? What else did you talk about yesterday? Shane Waldron to the Bears.
No, yesterday was mock draft show only.
He beat out.
No news. No nothing.
He beat out PFF Zach
for
the Bears job, I guess. So.
Well, we need PFF Zach to go to the Steelers just for funnies.
Oh, my gosh. What would we do?
I mean, I would immediately find every Steelers fan that has been tagging me in any piece of news related
PFF
to Steelers and be like,
yeah.
Hey, look, your new offensive coordinator was working at PFF.
PFF guy, calling your plays. We used to do a podcast together.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it all back. We could bring it back maybe when he's OC, Zach.
The big-time throwcast.
I need another vote. Is the big-time throwcast a good name? Let us know in the chat. That's a good name for a
In order for podcast. Him to be on that, he would need to get a quarterback that has big time throws.
Oh man.
I'm just saying, Kenny Pickett, it's not
a big
really
time
his
throw
thing.
Guy. Not a touchdown guy either.
Yeah.
All right, conference championship week. You ready to go?
Yeah.
Kansas City Chiefs at the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens are favored by 3.5 as of right now. This is going to be your 3 o'clock game on Sunday afternoon. Ravens, as you, I think you mentioned on the other show, first time Baltimore has hosted an AFC championship, the city of Baltimore since like 1970. Chiefs, sixth straight AFC championship, first on the road. Of course, Mahomes and the Chiefs, their first road win of the Mahomes era last week in the playoffs against Josh Allen and the Bills, going up against the Ravens, who took care of the Houston Texans pretty easily in the divisional round.
They did, very easily, in fact.
At least in the second half.
Right. Light rain, another light rain forecast. Remember, the 49ers game was supposedly light rain, and then that became an absolute downpour, which materially affected the game. So that's something to keep an eye on generally for this game. The biggest thing, though, I think is, look, the Chiefs offense has looked like the Chiefs offense the most in the last couple of weeks. Now, was that, hey, it's playoff Mahomes, and we know playoff Mahomes is a different animal. As soon as you get to crunch time, that's when everybody turns it on, and the Chiefs are just going to be the Chiefs, roll back to the Super Bowl, win another one, and on with the dynasty. Or did they simply have the good fortune of running up against a team that ran out of edge rushers and started signing them off the street, and then the next week ran up against a team that ran out of linebackers, and for some reason were like, AJ Klein, you need to go back in there. I don't care if you just hurt yourself. We have nobody left. On you go. AJ Klein in the last 5 years has averaged a PFF grade in the 40s. I think it's like 45, 44.8, something like that. And apparently he was the best option they had. They were down at least three starting caliber linebackers, if you count sort of what they've gone through in the depth chart. That's before you factor in that they, you know, let Tremaine Edmonds walk in the offseason. So what I'm saying is we don't yet know if Kansas City's revival on offense is real or if it's a product of running up against a couple of defenses that were absolutely beat up right before they ran into them. Baltimore, neither of those things is true. They have a formidable pass rush. They've got seven guys with more than 20 pressures on the season. They can get after the quarterback. And the strength of the defense is arguably the area where Buffalo were weakest. They've got multiple athletic linebackers. They've got a matchup weapon in Kyle Hamilton. You know, they have the best pass defense in the NFL by a bunch of different statistics. So minimum, the difficulty level is being ramped way up, even if the revival was real. And if the revival wasn't real, you're going from one end of the spectrum to the other in terms of what that's likely to look like.
I think you did a great job of setting that up, Sam, of
Thank
describing, you.
You
know, where we are here. Because I think there's kernels of truth in both things. I think the Chiefs offense that has been the, not the weakness of the team with the Chiefs, but certainly well below standard this year. And that's been because of drops and inconsistency at receiver and untimely turnovers. And Mahomes didn't play his best ball this year in addition to not having a lot of help outside. And then all of a sudden in the playoffs, I think two things happened, right? They did run into favorable matchups that they took advantage of, beat up Bills and beat up Dolphins teams. And then Mahomes, I think again, I think his superpower is not so much the special plays. It, you know, the highlight reel at the end of Mahomes' career is going to be out of this world, right? You're gonna run through all of his best plays and be like, wow, that was amazing. But I think his superpower is not making mistakes and not missing. And I know he missed a couple touchdowns. He did miss a couple in the Buffalo game, which also shows just how open everything was, right? I mean, the fact that Mahomes went like 17 of 23 and a couple, three or four of his incompletions were open as well. I mean, they should have had maybe even more offensively, the Chiefs. But Mahomes doesn't make a ton of mistakes from a turnover perspective or just like a missing open throws perspective.
Well, also, again, is playoff Mahomes real or is it not, right? Playoff Mahomes has a turnover-worthy play rate of 1.7% for his career.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like, that's absurd. The last year, remember, hobbled Mahomes, could not move last season. Like, literally, if it wasn't the playoffs, there's no chance he would have been playing these games. That season and this season, so two games, Miami-Buffalo, combined one turnover-worthy play.
That was the ball that slipped out of his hand in the AFC Championship,
right,
against the Bengals. He played really clean football.
Basically, almost two complete playoff runs at this point with one turnover-worthy play. That's insane.
That's
completely absurd and unrealistic, and yet, based off a career in which his playoff turnover-worthy play rate is 1.7%, which is basically a league-leading figure for a regular season, he's done that in the playoffs now over what is amounting to like a full season's worth of play.
I was thinking about this the other day. I think his production profile, not stylistically, the production profile kind of resembles like a Drew Brees. It's high volume. It's actually a lot of short passes. It's a lot of underneath stuff. And then now Mahomes' game is more opportunistic downfield passes. Last week was the best downfield passing attack the Chiefs have had, where they had three or four completions on 20-plus yard throws. Mahomes had been horrible this season statistically, throwing the ball down the field. His statistical or production profile more resembles a Breeze, who was always among the league leaders in avoiding just negatively graded plays. He would just hit all the stuff he was supposed to hit, and then he was also efficient throwing the ball down the field. Obviously, stylistically, Mahomes and Breeze are different, but I think that's what we're seeing from him. And so I think the playoff Chiefs do bring this level of focus and calm, and Andy Reid just being in there like, oh, the Bills don't have linebackers? We know the run plays that are going to work there. Their run game was incredible last week. We're going to attack A.J. Klein directly with Travis Kelce. We will isolate those guys. In week one with the Dolphins, we know where their weaknesses are. I think all of that combined leads to the Chiefs, in not their best season right now, unable to have a team like the Bills even capitalize on the home field advantage, and the Chiefs are sitting here in the AFC Championship again. So all that said, that's what makes this matchup so great, because the Ravens' defense has been good pretty much start to finish this year. I think there's ways to look at the numbers, EPA per play and points per game, and say they're one of the better defenses over the last couple of years. I don't know if that's what they really are, but they do just make life difficult. And I think the open throws, I think the windows are just going to be a little bit tighter. Unless Andy Reid's in his bag again, I think the windows are going to be tighter for this Chiefs offense. And if the Chiefs get through this offensively, then, man, a spectacular run by them, because this is a challenge going up against Baltimore.
It really is. I mean, overall defense, I think it's debatable how good they are relative to, you know, historical teams, but pass defense in particular, these are the two best pass defenses in the NFL this season.
Yeah.
Like Baltimore and Kansas City, 1-2. When you look at what the Ravens have done, particularly in the passing game to opposing quarterbacks, to opposing teams, it's been formidable. I mean, the Texans last week, CJ Stroud, Bobby Slowick, those guys were fresh off absolutely eviscerating the Cleveland Browns defense, which itself was pretty good. They annihilated them. They had them absolutely on the ropes the entire game. They couldn't get anything going against Baltimore. Like, that's a huge challenge. So CJ Stroud was incredible this year, but a rookie, Bobby Slowick, a rookie offensive coordinator, now you're going up against seasoned veterans playing at a higher level than either one of those guys, I think. Like Andy Reid doing what he does, and then obviously Patrick Mahomes versus CJ Stroud. Again, the difficulty level for the Ravens defense is going way up as well. Mike McDonald, their defense coordinator, has done an incredible job this season against some really, really good offenses. But now you're going up against this group. And, you know, if you start looking at playoff Patrick Mahomes, we are talking almost 600, or sorry, over 600 dropbacks, almost 600 pass attempts now in his playoff career, because he's been there so many times. His numbers are getting ridiculous. Like, he's passed for 4,500 yards, more than 7.8 yards per attempt, 38 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, with, as we said, a turnover-worthy play rate of just 1.7% and adjusted completion rate a hair under 80%. Remember, most of these games are outside in the freezing ass cold in Kansas City. They're not like optimal passing conditions. And then you had another run where he couldn't move. We were talking about, if he's playing at this level, like, it's, you actually need his receivers to let him down in order for you to have any shot of stopping it. Because, and even last week, like, you need Mecole Hardman fumbling over the goal line for it to be a thing, right? Like, the, if Mahomes plays at this level, which he's now done for, you know, half a dozen seasons, if he plays at this level, you need other players around him to screw it up, because he's not. Like, he isn't giving you the opportunities, even if you just, oh, capitalize on the mistakes he makes. He's not making enough mistakes for you to capitalize for it to mean anything. You actually need Mecole Hardman to fumble the ball. You need Kadarius Toney to jump offside. You need Travis Kelce to drop a couple of passes. You need all the other players around him to screw up, because he's not screwing up enough.
Yeah, I mean, Mahomes, his worst games in the playoffs have been two of the Super Bowls. I think his Super Bowl against the Niners wasn't great, outside of the couple throws and the comeback attempt, and then, of course, against the Bucks.
Which, and that, even that Bucks game relied on just the sheer overwhelming of that offensive line. Like, they just got too many injuries and it became too big of a problem.
But in the Chiefs last week did play a clean game. The Hardman thing, of course, look, they were, it goes both ways, right? They were gifted the ball in Buffalo territory, and then Hardman also gave it away. They had played a really clean game. They weren't really dropping passes. They didn't have penalties. Valdez-Scantling caught the two passes thrown his way. They were both deep balls, right? That was like last year. Valdez-Scantling, two catches, 60-something yards. If they play like that, they're tough to beat, whether it's the Ravens or not. So, yeah, if the Chiefs play a clean game like they did last week offensively, they were not really stopped by Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Only one or two drives, maybe, because they had a couple, you know, drives that finished in kneels. The Hardman one. But as an offense, they were moving the ball effectively and efficiently. And again, they were doing it on the ground as well. Injury-wise, Joe Tooney's going to be out at left guard. Nick Allegretti will, who's a good backup. He's a good, solid, you know, guy who could play tackle, guy who could play guard type of backup. I don't think that we're looking at this disastrous situation like we did in the Super Bowl in 2020. But again, you've got Justin Matabike. He's had a monster year as far as sacking the quarterback, rushing the passer, playing the run. Michael Pierce, Travis Jones, those guys are tough up front. I mean, when you look at the Ravens' depth chart defensively, it's not even that they have a ton of stars. I think Kyle Hamilton is a star in the making with what he's capable of doing, lining up in the slot, playing free safety. But they're not a bunch of stars. It's just a whole bunch of PFF green on this defense. Everybody's good. Everybody's solid. I think Roquan Smith, I think on-off splits are sometimes noisy, but the data since they traded for Roquan Smith in the middle of 2022, that's the best defense in the NFL by a wide margin. Roquan has helped that a lot. So that's going to be the challenge, I think, for the Chiefs offense and what the Ravens defense can do to, I think they'll have a chance to slow down this Chiefs offense, at least certainly better than the Dolphins and Bills did.
That's the thing. Like, that's what it comes down to is, okay, we don't really know yet. It's theoretically, it's good on good if the Chiefs offense is back in its stride, if Patrick Mahomes is playoff Mahomes, you know, once again. But we've only seen that go against bad so far this season. Not that the Dolphins and the Bills have bad defenses generally, but in those games. I mean, Miami signed two 35-plus-year-old edge rushers 4 days before the game just so they would have bodies to be out there, right? Vic Fangio decided that the only way he was going to have a prayer in that game was to blitz Patrick Mahomes 58% of the time, something like that, which we know is not a good idea. Like, you don't blitz Patrick Mahomes generally because he carves up the blitz. And yet Vic Fangio, one of the best minds, defensive minds in the game, was like, it's still the best thing I can do. It's not a winning game plan, but it's the best one I have available to me, because the alternative is we rely on the geriatric bones of Melvin Ingram and Justin Houston and Bruce Irvin to try and get pressure up front, and it's just not going to happen. So
I wanted to bring that up too, because early in Mahomes' career, he played the Ravens a bunch, and it was when Wink Martindale was still defensive coordinator there, and Wink always blitzes. Yeah. That one game where he decided he was going to not blitz, right? It was that one time that he decided. But against Mahomes, who's always killed the blitz, and again, killing the blitz isn't just the quarterback. It's the scheme. It's having outlets. It's having answers. We saw that with the Eagles against the Bucs. They didn't have any answers. The Chiefs, as a whole, have really good blitz answers. Mahomes is awesome at seeing it and recognizing it. And Wink Martindale and the Ravens blitzed him like crazy, and they would get torched all the time. The Bills defense that didn't blitz, historically, has had better success against Mahomes, at least in the regular season, not in the playoffs. So the teams that sit back at least have a better chance. Now, this isn't the same Ravens scheme, though. When they blitz, it is more calculated. They do a good job of, you know, bringing rushers when you're not expecting and where you're not expecting it from, and they break down your protection scheme. And again, I think they want to pick their spots with Mahomes, but this is a different Ravens team, and it's just fascinating because of Lamar Jackson injuries and just general schedule quirks. These teams haven't played in a few years, right? We see Chiefs Bills every year. We're seeing Chiefs Bengals every year. We're seeing it in the playoffs. We haven't seen these teams ever play in the playoffs. Mahomes, Lamar. And they haven't played in the regular season since, what, 2020, is it, or 21? So it's been a while that we've actually seen these two teams here.
The Ravens this year are on the lower end of the blitz scale. They don't blitz very much, 28% of the time. So they have gone completely away from that Wink Martindale style of defense. They are much more designed, I guess, to stop a Patrick Mahomes team now. But the point being, you know, that was how problematic the Dolphins and the Bills were when they faced the Chiefs. You know, the Dolphins had to change the game plan completely because they didn't have any pass rushers. And Buffalo, I mean, they were trying to run their defense, but their defense with AJ Klein out there covering Travis Kelce, and it's just not going to work. So all you can do if you're Kansas City is beat what's in front of you and exploit what's in front of you. But the things to exploit against Baltimore are a lot less obvious than the things were to exploit against Miami and Buffalo.
All right, we'll get to the other side of the ball. But first, is 2024 bringing exciting and unexpected changes to your life? Here's a secret weapon to help you face those challenges with more confidence. It's a great term life insurance policy. Yes, really. Fabric by Gerber Life makes it simple to protect your family's financial future so you can focus on what's ahead, knowing your family is protected if something else unexpected happens. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Other side of the ball, Ravens offense against this Chiefs defense. Chiefs defense, I mean, I know the feeling last week was the Bills were running the ball like crazy, and there were drives where they did that. And I don't know how much people have talked about this, but it did feel like the Bills were beating them up in the trenches. And they were early on, right? They were picking up 7 a pop and 6 a pop. And on 2nd and 4, they were picking up 4. They were doing what they needed to do from a run game perspective. But there was a point where the Chiefs adjusted. And that's been the story of this Chiefs defense this year. Second half adjustments. And to me, if the Ravens, the back and forth between the Ravens and the Chiefs on this side of the ball might end up just determining the game. Because the criticism of Greg Roman's offense in Baltimore was a failure to adjust. And Todd Monken comes in, and not only do the Ravens have more answers, they're tapping into those answers. If you're taking away the power run game, they can run horizontally. Lamar can run at any time. They can throw the ball down the field. They can throw short, they can throw intermediate. They have answers. They have different style players that are tough to cover. But the Chiefs defense has been equally good at second half adjustments. And there's been a lot of games where the Chiefs have given up 10 or 17 points in the first half. In the second half, it's been nothing. So I think this might be the thing that determines the game. And that comes down to Lamar Jackson, of course, being the X factor. Because I don't care what you come up with on the chalkboard to stop Lamar. You might have all the right number of defensive players in the box to stop the run, whatever it might be. But if he makes one guy miss, the chalkboard becomes wrong. And so that's where I think it's Lamar and Spags going head-to-head here. And in the second half, right, we're looking at a game might be 10-10 in the first half, 7-7 in the first half. What's going to happen in the second half here? Ravens offense versus Chiefs defense, two sides of the ball that are so good at understanding the game flow and making adjustments.
It's a lot like last week, honestly, where, you know, sure, there's how does the run game go overall? How do you match up against those receivers? Can you get pressure? But ultimately, it comes down to the defense, one of the best defenses in the NFL versus Josh Allen, right? And for most of the game, Josh Allen made just enough plays to keep ahead, to keep winning, to keep the Buffalo where they wanted to be. And then right at the end, he made a couple of mistakes. And so Spags wins, right? So Spags gets the W at the end. I mean, this is the same thing, except it's Lamar Jackson instead of Josh Allen. Like last week, the Ravens rushed for 229 yards against the Texans. Like that was the big difference. The pass game, Texans defense did okay. The run game, they got wrecked. Lamar Jackson accounted for 100 of those.
Right.
Like that's going to be the thing again is, okay, how does Kansas City stop Lamar Jackson? Can he make enough plays basically by himself? Obviously, he's got to throw to somebody. You know, other people are going to carry the ball. They'll have some success as well. But it really is. It's Spags and that defense overall against Lamar Jackson.
I said on the Monday show, I think the Bills executed their game plan unbelievably. I think they did. Now, again, there might have been a point where they were running the ball so well that they may have thrown away a couple drives by trying to continue to run on first down, and they should have taken their shot plays earlier. And then when they took their shot plays, you know, Sherfield dropped it, Diggs dropped it. Mm-hmm. But if the Ravens execute the same game plan, or if the game flow goes the same as last week, which was the Chiefs had two first half possessions, and then, but every time the Chiefs had the ball, they basically scored. They at least kicked a field goal on every single drive except one, I believe. If the Ravens hold the Chiefs to seven drives in this game, they're going to feel pretty good about that. And they could do it in a similar way, the 14-play drives, the 12-play drives, between their power run game, Lamar picking up what's necessary, and then the ability to just morph. When they do start taking away the run, we can go empty. We can create we've got the screen game with Zay Flowers. We have the intermediate game. We got Mark Andrews coming back, right? The Ravens should feel good about their weapons. Mm-hmm. So I think the Ravens can execute the same game plan Buffalo did. And if they do that, run the ball, shorten the game, then it comes down to, will the Ravens defense make more stops than the Bills defense?
Right.
And probably yes. Even if the Chiefs get theirs, you could probably still hold them to maybe 21 points, right? So I think the Ravens might look at last week and say, man, the Bills, they got to the doorstep. And if we get to the doorstep, we'll be able to pull this off. And it comes, and so I think the Ravens offense is equipped to execute that, run the ball, and maybe control the game flow again.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's going to be similar to last week. Maybe a lower scoring game, but the idea is going to be the same. It's going to be close. And then it's a case of which side makes either fewer mistakes or makes, you know, one more big play at the end. Like if Josh Allen gets that touchdown instead of getting bumped and missing, and then, you know, this is the third down play that gets screwed, like maybe the Bills win that game, right? Maybe they go ahead, maybe they hold the next drive, or we get another Chiefs score and then another Bills score, whatever. But one play might have determined that game going one way or the other way. It's going to be the same this week. Like Lamar Jackson is going to have an opportunity. Patrick Mahomes is going to have an opportunity. You're going up against two of the best defenses in the NFL, maybe the two best defenses in the NFL, and you're going up against a guy who has been historically amazing in the playoffs and another guy who's probably going to win the MVP. So, like, it doesn't get any better than that as a billing. Elite defense versus one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Not just best, but, like, most difficult to defend. I mean, obviously, Lamar Jackson is probably the most dynamic athlete the game has ever seen at the quarterback position. And then Mahomes, you know, he's never going to get the credit for it, but that guy is, he makes 2, 3, 4 plays a game in the playoffs that are with his legs that wreck defenses. And even against Buffalo, I mean, what did he gain in that? Gained like 19 yards in that game.
He had a 24 or 26 yard or something like that.
Right.
Because those
where he just took off, yeah. Right? And again, the defense, it looked like he was going to pick up a couple of yards, and then he just somehow keeps weaving into the space and always gets more than he's expected to have.
I think it might be a more Mahomes relying on his legs type of game. I think they'll have tighter windows, and he'll be more inclined to take off. And then it'll be on Jadeveon Clowney, Kyle Van Noy, Matabike. I mean, those guys trust in their staying in their pass rush lanes. Like, even the first pass Mahomes dropped back, Gregory Rousseau was in the backfield. Mahomes just shrugs him off, completes a five-yard pass. That's what I'm talking about, the negative plays that Mahomes doesn't create. He doesn't take sacks, and he doesn't miss a whole lot of throws. So you just have this consistency of the offense. It's not always the explosives. It's just the consistency of not taking negatives, whereas Baltimore is going to have to find a way to force a turnover, to have a sack here and there, and then avoid those disastrous, you know, scrambles. Disastrous for the defense, the Mahomes-type scrambles to move the chains. Narrative-wise, of course, you know, Mahomes and the Chiefs trying to get to the Super Bowl again. You know, their ability to come out, just look confident, look like they've been there before. And, you know, maybe that's overblown. And if Josh Allen just hits that one pass down the field, it's like, oh, the Chiefs lost. Who cares? But the Chiefs came out, and they've executed pretty well for 2 weeks in the playoffs. But the Ravens bringing their own level of confidence to the table. I told you, John Harbaugh was, like, unbelievably confident at halftime. He said, Lamar's taken over this team from a leadership standpoint. He's on a mission. Something's got to give here, right? Mahomes, and it's playoff Mahomes against Lamar, who's, you know, he's won games in the playoffs now, but still he's trying to be that guy, right? He's trying to get that first Super Bowl. There's a lot on the line here, and both teams coming in not only playing well, but doing it with a confidence, either because the Chiefs, they've done it before, or because the Ravens just been laser focused from start to finish this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this really exciting game. This is one of the big ones.
All right, man. Just a reminder, too, like conference championship week, the NFL doesn't choose which game goes first or second. They literally just alternate AFC versus NFC. It was the AFC's year to be at 3 o'clock. That's why it's the first game. They don't always say, this game's better. Let's put it in primetime. So it's the 3 o'clock game. You mentioned light rain. Shouldn't be too cold.
Light rain.
In Baltimore.
40s, I think I said.
Ravens by 3.5. Where are you going to go?
43 in light rain. Oh, God. I guess I kind of have to go with Kansas City, even though I think Baltimore will win the game.
I think Baltimore could win by three is the thing, right?
Yeah.
By the way, you know, kicking game could be huge in this one. This Justin Tucker's time to shine, potentially, to get to a Super Bowl. Yes. Harrison Butker's been – they've both been fantastic at 50-plus yard field goals. All that stuff's going to matter here. I'll take Kansas City to cover as well. I would not be surprised by a Ravens three-point win, though. I think it'll be close. I think it'll be a good game. Can't wait to see it.
I think Baltimore ends up winning the game, but the Chiefs, it's close.
Yes. I think that's where I'll go as well. All right, I got to tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks. We won last week.
Mm.
The lineup hit last
First
week.
First clean result. Everything hit. No,
top to bottom.
No need for the flex play.
So our friend Eli in the booth, he's got a new lineup for this week. We've got Christian McCaffrey. We've got this special, right? It's more than a half rush yard. So it's not 89.5.
I think he'll hit that.
More than a half
rushing
yard. In addition to Travis Kelce going more than 39.5 receiving yards, Amon-Ra St. Brown going more than 59.5 receiving yards, and then Gus Edwards going more than 37.5 rushing yards. I feel good about all those. Kelce, Amon-Ra, like those guys are going to get relied upon. Gus Edwards, I think the Ravens are going to run the ball. And then McCaffrey going more than a half rushing yard, I think you're good there.
I definitely feel good about the McCaffrey one. It's a very low number for Kelce. I feel like that's good as well. You would assume Amon-Ra St. Brown would go above that, and then Gus Edwards is the only one that you would be like, yeah, but even so, it's not a high number. So, yeah, all for it.
All right, so that's our entry for this week. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. The easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than a 2-6 player stat projection and watch the winnings roll in. Want to play alongside some of Prize Picks' favorite players like rapper Meek Mill and comedian Andrew Schultz? You can now find community plays under the promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the Prize Picks community each week. Prize Picks even offers a reboot policy so their entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, that player is rebooted. Prize Picks is the only daily fantasy sports platform with an injury insurance policy. So you've seen our lineup for this week. Go check it out right now. Go do it at prizepicks.com/PFFNFL, and you use the code PFFNFL for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, it's prizepicks.com/PFFNFL. Use code PFFNFL. Get a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. One more game to get through here.
I have an update. We like to correct misinformation on this show when it goes out there.
Is it mine or yours?
Neither really. Remember, there was that, we talked a little bit about Matt LaFleur had that comment of every time his kicker goes out, he just prays, you know? And we were saying it was one of the craziest things any head coach has ever said.
It was reported all over social media.
Yeah, well, it was reported on the broadcast. I mean, that was the thing. Yeah. It was one of those sideline reports. I forget who the guy was that gave it, but that was his report of this is what Matt LaFleur said to me when we asked about his kicker. And LaFleur was asked about that, obviously, during the week. And he basically said that he was very disappointed that that was how his comments were interpreted. You know, when he sort of said that, it wasn't like my kicker is so bad that every time he goes out there, I just pray and hope he nails the kick. He's like, you know, when you're a head coach, you're basically helpless at this point. So you're just praying when your kicker goes out there. Like,
not Carlson in particular, just kickers generally.
And that to the sideline reporter was interpreted as, wow, that guy's so bad that Matt LaFleur says he prays when his kicker goes out
there. See, I said that to you on Monday. I said, maybe he's just a praying man. You know, if he's just a guy that likes to say a prayer when the kicker goes out there. I would too.
Well, that was effectively. Matt LaFleur was trying to convey that in the helplessness of that situation, his reaction is,
Lord grant him at least 95% hit rate.
Whereas the sideline reporter, whose name I've forgotten, was like, oh, Matt LaFleur says the kicker's so bad that he prays every time he goes out there to take a kick. So anyway, I just wanted to, you know, correct that, put it on the record as a show that does not like to promote misinformation.
We don't like doing that.
At least not.
Even when it's others.
Yeah.
And why I always ask for the context.
Yeah, we do it quite a lot, but we don't like it.
No, we don't like it at all.
Right.
No, it's not intentional.
Most
not intentional misinformation.
Yeah. So where possible, we like to correct it.
Yeah. Editor's note. All right. Let's go. By the way, Chiefs Ravens. Tell everybody quickly, Jimmy Seafood.
Oh.
Because you can order.
Yes.
I would order that food.
Oh, what a tailgate.
For this weekend or for the Super Bowl.
Well, both. I mean,
both. You know. But we got free shipping over at Jimmy Seafood.
Yeah, they do.
Diehard Baltimore Ravens fans, don't either hold that for or against them. Just saying, that's where they are. And if the Ravens win, we'll probably be hanging out with Jimmy's out at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, if they do tailgate stuff. I think they're in the stadium as well. Like they maybe have a, I don't know, like a concessions stand or whatever the hell it is there. Anyway, the point is they're all over Baltimore. So if you're from the Baltimore area, I'm sure you are familiar with Jimmy's and, you know, frequent there. If you're not from Baltimore, it is life-changing food. Their main sort of, you know, flagship product, I guess, is the crab cakes. And, you know, the kind of crab cakes you get in the grocery store are not great. You know, they're bready. They're
the imitation crab?
Well, not even the imitation crab, but it's stuff full of other things. Like, you know, there's binder and there's potatoes and stuff in there. It's whatever. It's not just crab. The Jimmy's crab cakes are insane. How insane? Well, apparently they ship them to Alaska, where it's not like there's a shortage of crab, right?
Yeah.
You got these guys out there on a boat dragging up thousands of pounds of crab on a day, and they're like, you know what I want? Jimmy's crabs, because this stuff isn't good enough. So I would go to their website. I would just build yourself a box of crab cakes and the egg rolls, the crab egg rolls. Build a giant box of them. Get it shipped to wherever you are in the country. Use, what's our promo code?
PFFNFLPOD.
Use code PFFNFLPOD to get yourself free shipping. And then thank us later. Because it will change your life.
Do it. I mean, if I was having a Super Bowl party, this is where I'm getting the food from.
Dude,
and that's what I would suggest.
Entire platter of those crab cake egg rolls.
Yeah. It would be a big hit. So if you're throwing a Super Bowl party, I suggest it. PFFNFLPOD. Get free shipping. On orders over $125 over at Jimmy's Seafood. All right, Lions at the 49ers. 49ers favored by 7 here. What I do like about the two conference championship games here is we do get unique matchups. They're not rematches. Get to see these two teams, both sets of games here, both games playing each other for the first time. But the Lions and the 49ers, Sam, what are you looking for?
The Lions in the NFC championship game.
Let's just sit here and...
The Lions are a game away from the Super Bowl. They've never been.
I do want to say, I don't regret things, but like we spent too much time talking about Jahmyr Gibbs and the draft capital thing, right? I don't want that to take away from how awesome it's been to watch the Lions get here. I just want to give a little bit of that history and discuss it with the Lions, because I said this to you this offseason, I think leading into the year, has there been a team in recent NFL history, other than making a massive change at quarterback and going and like picking up, like drafting a Joe Burrow or drafting a Patrick Mahomes or a Lamar Jackson, has there been a team in the last 20 years that has systematically improved each year and then, you know, peaked? And this, I don't even know if this is the peak for the Lions. Right. This might just be the start of sustained success in the NFC. But I don't, this is one of the best team building jobs we've seen over, say, a 3-year period where the driver was not the quarterback. And I'm nothing against Jared Goff, but he's at worst a comparable quarterback to Matthew Stafford from what we've seen. They've made a lateral move at quarterback, say, even if Stafford's better or a little bit better. Say a lateral move at quarterback, but they built in the line, they built the trenches, they added playmakers. They've built an offense that is explosive and has a unique set of playmakers that are tough to cover, and they have a defense that can they've been a little up and down this year, but they can compete, and they've built this thing systematically from over 3 years, and they've gone from picking number 2 overall just a couple years ago to now in the NFC Championship.
They are a fascinating story because it's compelling, I think, on a number of different levels. Like, they are everybody's favorite second team or everybody's favorite team now that we're down to 4, in part because they're such a historically downtrodden franchise. Like, okay, the Super Bowl only goes back so far, and if you go back further than that, the Lions have championships. But if we keep this to the Super Bowl era, the Lions are one of 2 teams that have never made a Super Bowl. It's them and it's the Cleveland Browns, the factory of sadness, right? So they are one of the most archetypal NFL downtrodden, beat up franchises. You then tie that to, you know, the city of Detroit itself suffering more economically than, you know, most cities in the U.S. down the decades and through various different sort of financial crises and all those kinds of things. So you've got incredible underdog story from a downtrodden franchise. That's a feel-good thing. You've got the city itself, you know, desperately needing something like this or desperately sort of deserving something like this. And then you have the third pillar of this, which is they came in and did it differently to almost any franchise out there. They hired a new GM and a new head coach, and they said from the outset, this is not going to be a year one thing. This is going to be a 2-3 year project. We are going to set foundation stones. We are going to set building blocks in place, and we are going to slowly move in this direction so that this is a long-term, sustainable period of success. And we are right at the start of that right now. But so far, it's happened exactly the way it was supposed to, right? They've gone from, as you said, the number 2 overall pick, and they've had some luck along the way, right? Jacksonville picking Trayvon Walker as opposed to Aiden Hutchinson is a huge break in the Lions' favor.
Absolutely.
As well as a few other things. So they've had some luck along the way as well, but they've steadily progressed, and they almost got there last year, and now this year they were supposed to, and they have, and now they're in the NFC title game. So it's just such a fantastic story on a number of different levels that really has turned them now into, I mean, the 49ers are one of the most storied franchises in the NFL, and everybody's rooting for the Lions.
So this is their second NFC championship game in history. So 1991, the last time, was that their last playoff win? Or was it 93?
That was their last home playoff win.
So 91, they did host a divisional game. They beat Troy Aikman and the Cowboys. 91, before the Cowboys became
right.
Super Bowl champs. And then the Lions lost to Washington in the NFC Championship.
But have never made a Super Bowl.
Never made a Super Bowl, right. This is the first time when I tweeted the Lions are playing for a Super Bowl right after the game. That was the first tweet in history where that was true, that the Lions are one game away from the Super Bowl.
I think it was Tirico, right? He was saying you should go text your friends. The Lions are playing in the NFC Championship game because that's never happened before.
Not in text messages, right. Not in tweets, not in anything. So it hasn't happened since 1991. They lost 41-10 in that game. But I think, you know, the history matters. And again, it's you throw in Dan Campbell and that intro press conference, and it's just been hashtag fun to watch.
When stories like this happen, you know, things like the story starts to get to places where it doesn't normally get covered, right? Like people that aren't necessarily au fait with the NFL and everything that goes on. So I was listening to a podcast that had come across that Dan Campbell press conference, the introductory press conference.
The rugby podcast talking about it or something?
Same kind of thing, but different. Yeah. Anyway, they come across it for the first time when they were playing that out. And one of the guys said, the thing that struck me the most about that is I was waiting for the point in the story where they started to win the fight. It never happened. It was just, we're going to get knocked down again, and then on the way up, and then we'll get knocked down again. And it was just, they kept losing. And he's like, I was assuming at some point the metaphor would come around to, and then we'll win eventually. He was like, no, we just kept getting smacked in the face and knocked to the turf, and it's just all the things that we would do to you on the way up from that, which I thought was quite funny.
Well, here they are, 7-point underdogs. So they're still
– they got up again.
They're still fighting an uphill battle. Let's start with the Lions offense against this Niners defense. I think there's Greg Olsen just did a great job last week again, I think, saying, hey, the 49 – I don't even look at these stats anymore, Sam. Like, which team has the fewest rushing yards allowed in the NFL? Because we know it doesn't matter. It doesn't – it's not a good stat. But Olsen had to highlight that. I think the Niners had the best, quote, best rushing defense in the NFL, as in fewest yards allowed. And Olsen just said, well, of course, if you're using volume stats and this team's winning all the time, nobody's going to run against them. That's why that number's there.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they're great stopping the run. And Olsen's highlighting this because the Packers were running all over them, right? They were spamming the toss sweep play and just doing a great job of making life easier for Jordan Love and the rest of that offense. I bring all that up to say the Lions are, man, they got a sexy run game. You know, it's like the exotic smash mouth that we were promised years ago by the Titans is what the Lions did. And I thought Chris did a great job highlighting how they pull Penei Sewell all the time, and they'll just change one little assignment to keep the defense off balance. The Lions have this great combination of good run blockers, good scheme that will just make one guy wrong in the scheme to create a hole, and good runners, right? An explosive runner in Jahmyr Gibbs and a good hard-nosed runner in David Montgomery. I think the Lions have a chance to run the ball really effectively against this Niners defense.
No, agreed. I mean, even if you just look at yards per attempt, they are immediately, like, almost exactly league average this season in terms of a run defense, the 49ers. It's only the volume stats that are obviously wildly swayed by the fact that they win almost every game and win hard every game that change that. It's an average run defense going up against a very good rush offense. So, I mean, honestly, I would expect a similar story to last week. I think Detroit's offense will have success. Like, it'll be able to run the ball. I would imagine they'll be able to pass the ball as well. They will look vaguely similar to how the Green Bay Packers were able to perform. And that, I think, I mean, it's inevitable. You get to the Final Four, you're going to be focusing on the quarterbacks. Every time Jared Goff plays these games, because it's Jared Goff, you're kind of waiting for the brain fart, the implosion, the Baker Mayfield play at the end of the game. And Goff generally has played, he hasn't had that this season. He had a meltdown for like a 4-week stretch randomly around Thanksgiving. And outside of that, he's played really well almost the entire time.
And in the playoffs, he had the one bad play in the pocket in the first game. And then last week against the Bucs, did throw one to the defense in the end zone. I think it was just an inaccurate throw. It wasn't meltdowny, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of similarities to maybe how the Packers attacked this Niners defense. I think they'll have the run game. The Lions will dial up some explosives. Is Khalif Raymond potentially back for the Lions in this one? Either way, you know, Jameson Williams will get some. He'll get some shot plays. I think Sam Laporta working the middle of the field will be an interesting one, because that's where the Niners have, you know, Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw might not have as much success there with those linebackers. But you got to dial up those shot plays. Take those, maybe not on Tre'Davious Ward, but on Ambry Thomas on the other side, where, you know, he had the 50-plus yard pass interference penalty last week. I think there's some opportunities there.
And multiple pass interference penalties on the day. I mean, he was making errors that were almost keeping pace with the number that Darnell Savage was making on the other side.
And then while we're talking about the Lions offense, it's going to be, you know, we forget Dan Campbell went for 4th-and-1 on like the 4 or whatever it was that led to one of the touchdowns. Like, those things matter. We know Dan Campbell is going to be hyper aggressive.
Yep.
And on the other side, we've got Kyle Shanahan, who always seems to be battling, hey, I'm the best play caller in the NFL, I create the best offense, but 2-minute situations, I get a little conservative timeout wise. You know, he plays more conservative than you would want from such an offensive-minded head coach, and that could end up being the difference in this one. Dan Campbell versus Kyle Shanahan from a game management standpoint.
Absolutely. I mean, Kyle Shanahan's game management on the biggest stage has been repeatedly questioned, and then Dan Campbell is one of the most aggressive head coaches in the NFL in game you know, script situation. So the good thing for the Lions, I mean, they're a 7-point underdog. They play like underdogs anyway.
Yeah.
Like that, I think, really suits them, that they make those calls anyway. Like even when they're winning games, even when they're the favorite, they play like that as just a matter of course with Dan Campbell as the head coach. So I think that's a great thing. When they go for a 4th-and-4 at some point in this game, it's not going to be a surprise. It's not going to be an extra added layer of pressure that the offense has to deal with. They've been doing that all season long. They're going to go for it anyway. They're used to going for it. They've got those plays ready because they've been going for it so much. Like, I think that really plays to their stead, that when they need to lean on those types of plays, they're already familiar with it. They've been doing it all season long. That is a good thing for them. One injury that I think is a huge potential thing for that side is, like, Frank Ragnow battled through injury, you know, against Vita Vea, against the Bucs defense. They really need him. It's a huge drop off when Frank Ragnow is not in that lineup. He's a guy that's, you know, consistently battled injuries for a couple of years. You know, if he's not able to go, or if he's like very hampered by that injury, it's a massive body blow to that offensive line.
Jonah Jackson at left guard too. If where is he?
I mean, he's doubtful right now.
Yeah. So if he those two injuries for the Lions.
Well, the Ragnow one becomes even more important,
right,
with the loss of Jonah Jackson. Because, like, he's probably not playing. And then if you also lose Ragnow, now the interior of our it goes back to being last year's offensive line when they had this revolving door on the interior and it just wasn't a strength anymore.
And because, of course, the Niners added Javon Hargrave this offseason, mm-hmm. added Chase Young during the season, added Randy Gregory during the season. Not that any of those guys have been dominant or great, but they're all good. Eric Armstead, his ability to win all over the defensive line. So the Niners might have a chance here, especially attacking left guard, to create those mismatches. And then every time Penei Sewell goes up against a great pass rusher, I think I highlight, hey, this could be one of the best matchups in the NFL. When he goes up against Nick Bosa, that's one of the best matchups in the NFL, one-on-one, offensive tackle versus edge rusher. So as always, the trenches are must-see. But in this one in particular, where, again, you go back to the culture and the team building philosophy of both of these teams, the Lions spent their time building the offensive line. The Niners, since 2019, have spent their time building the defensive line. And when the Niners felt like, hey, they've got one of the best defensive lines in the league, like they did last year, they still went and got Javon Hargrave. And then they still traded for Chase Young and still got Randy Gregory this year. They are never done. And so those two units going up against each other, hashtag fun to watch once again, because that's the culture of these two teams.
Bosa hasn't had a bad game this year. He has had like the quietest, most dominant season I can think of, where nobody is talking about him for any kind of award or any, you know, anything like that. And yet, okay, he needed the divisional playoff round to get there, but he's got 100 pressures on the season. He barely played the Week 18 game. So the final game of the season, he only played 8 snaps and only had 1 pressure because of it. But the guy's basically had 100 pressures in the year, has been good every single game. His pass rushing has been exceptional in like half of those games. He's been good against the run. And for some reason, he's sort of flying under the radar as, Nick Bosa's not having the best year. You know, he's not at his usual level. Like, that dude is a nightmare every single game he goes and plays. And Penei Sewell's absolutely going to have to bring, you know, the big boy pants to the game. Otherwise, he's going to get wrecked.
He's good at the things that he can control, right? That's what we're always trying to quantify here. Are you winning your one-on-ones? Are you winning, creating pressure? Whatever it might be. So that battle's going to be awesome. Anything else on that side of the ball? But I think Ben Johnson, despite having 75 interviews this week, you might dial up even, you know, a few more trick plays, shot plays more than trick plays, I would say. Shot plays, getting Jahmyr Gibbs in space. The other thing that you keep bringing up, do the Lions do whatever they can to get up early on the 49ers? Does this become part of the strategy? I always joke that it's a hope, not a strategy. But you can dial up more shot plays early in the game, right? You can do things to perhaps try to put the Niners in a hole to try to take them out of their offense.
And you can also at least, you know, things like taking the ball at the start of the game. I mean, it's as you say, it's a hope, not a strategy to then turn that. Like, winning the coin toss and taking the ball doesn't – it's a big leap to go from there – to a 14-0 lead, which is what you're trying to get to, right? Like, we want to score, hold, score again. Now we're where we want to be. There's a lot that needs to happen between taking the ball from the coin toss and getting 14-0 up. But one of the things to get to 14-0 up, I think, that will help is taking the ball first, right? I think you're closer to that by taking the ball than you are by not taking the ball. So I do feel that against this 49ers team, a standard operating procedure for every offense or for every team they run up against should be to take the ball and try and score first and at least start to put them under some pressure. Whether or not you get there, I mean, nobody really has been able to do it yet, which is, you know, part of the problem. Like, Green Bay almost did it, but couldn't quite do it. So, you know, with every team that faces the 49ers, I think the story is the same. If you can put them in that specific situation, I think it's huge for your opportunity to win the game. And disproportionately so, right? So obviously anytime you're 14-0 up against anybody, you have a better chance of winning the game. But I think you have a disproportionate advantage versus the 49ers than versus other good teams. So if you're Detroit, I would absolutely take the ball and try and get that done. Whether or not you get there is a completely different prospect.
All right, other side of the ball. Niners have it going up against the Lions defense. Another fascinating matchup, man, because you've got the Niners offense that when Deebo Samuel's out there and healthy, right?
Which is a 50-50 proposition now, apparently.
He's got the shoulder. Somebody in the chat says he's cleared, but again, he's been banged up a ton off and on, and you see there is a difference in this offense, and it's not that they don't have other playmakers. It's just I think Debo's the one that dictates to the defense more, right? Because on any given play, he can line up in the backfield. They don't do that nearly as much as they used to because they have Christian McCaffrey, but it breaks, as we've said before, breaks defenses more to put a receiver in the backfield than it does to put a running back out wide. Mm-hmm. Running back out wide, defenses see that all the time. Receiver in the backfield, you have specifically matched up a cornerback with him. It changes your front. It changes your box count and who's playing the run and who has to fit the run. It changes everything. And Deebo does that. And that opens things up for Brandon Ayuk, for Christian McCaffrey, for George Kittle. Every time we talk about the Niners offense or a Shanahan offense, I look at the linebackers. And that's where I know Derek Barnes had the game-clinching interception the other day. Mm-hmm. I got concerns about the Lions linebackers, though. I think Alex Anzalone has had a very good season. Friend of the show. Since joining the show in training camp, very good season for Anzalone. Perhaps we've underrated him through the years in our grading. He may have suggested that. Alex Anzalone, probably really good. Jack Campbell, he's been a rookie. I think he's played like a rookie this year, especially in coverage. Passes behind him, Jack Campbell, struggled a little bit. I think he'll be a good player. I have concerns about Jack Campbell and the rest of the Lions linebackers. Jalen Reeves-Maybin has been playing a lot in, you know, nickel sub-packages. It might be a Reeves-Maybin type of game to slow down this passing attack. As always, the Lions linebackers are going to have the focus put on them.
Yeah, I mean, I think this side of the ball is why the 49ers are 7-point favorites. You know, the Lions do not have the best defense in the world. It's not like the other game we talked about. You know, they don't have the Baltimore defense. It's a completely different proposition. So how they slow down what has been one of the most unstoppable offenses in the NFL is huge. Now, one, if Deebo doesn't play, I think that is a massive, massive deal. Like, as you said, on-off splits are always noisy, but it's probably not a coincidence that in the three games he missed earlier in the season, the Lions had a three-game, or the 49ers had a three-game losing skid against some unexplainable teams for that to happen against. And then this game, a week ago, Deebo goes out and the offense stalls. You know, they're not what they were. Now, there's always confounding factors. It was also rain. The last time they played in the rain against Cleveland, Brock Purdy also played badly and couldn't get it done. So who knows? But if you're the 49ers, you desperately do not want to be without Deebo Samuel in this game, just in case there is signal within that noise. And conversely, if you're the Lions defense, the thing you want to see the most is Deebo doesn't play, or he plays but he's not 100%, or he plays and he leaves the game early because he rushed it back and he wasn't 100%, whatever. Deebo not being a factor for the Lions is absolutely huge. Outside of that, you know, one area, again, it's been a potential weakness for the 49ers all year, and nobody's really been able to exploit it to the point where it mattered. But Aiden Hutchinson lines up most of the time on the left side. Colton McKivitz is probably the weakest link on that offensive line and a potential liability Aiden Hutchinson versus McKivitz is the type of matchup the Lions desperately need to get change out of for that defense to survive against what is, you know, a very, very good offense.
I completely agree, but I would also say my season-long analysis on the Lions and their pass rush, they certainly have those games where Hutch gets his 7 or 8 pressures and no one else gets more than 2 or 3. And you're going up against Brock Purdy, who is really good at extending plays. And what I think what's happened a lot to this Lions defense this year is they get the one isolated pressure. And if one guy gets pressure on the play, if it's a clean win, you know, that's a challenge for the offense. If it's like a half win, you know, you're pushing the pocket, you're moving a QB off the spot, it's less effective. And those are the plays I would be concerned about if I'm the Lions. Like Hutch wins, doesn't finish the play, kind of moves Purdy. It's a good rush, whatever. But Purdy extends the play, and there's no one else there to clean it up, right? There's no one else. That'd be my concern with Detroit because Purdy's good at extending those plays. And then that puts the pressure on the Lions' coverage. You got to remain sticky and scramble drill, and we've seen a ton of those plays this year, right? Purdy to Ayuk, Purdy to Kittle. That was the touchdown the other day against the Packers. Purdy to Kittle on the move. If there's a couple of those plays, in addition to the Shanahan plays, right? That's what we've said all year. Kyle's going to win some plays. The playmakers are going to win some plays, right? Debo's just going to outrun the defense, or Kittle's going to outrun the defense, and then Purdy's going to make some plays. That's what's made the Niners so difficult to defend, is the scheme plus the playmakers plus Purdy's going to play outside of structure a couple times and win. That's what makes it really difficult on Detroit. So I think they're going to struggle to slow down the Niners, and that's why I think offensively Detroit has to play that game, like try to get to 30. It's a big number, but you got to expect you might give up 27, and we need to get to 30 offensively to win this thing.
Hopefully the Lions are getting back James Houston for this game. He was activated in time for the last game, didn't play in the last game.
When was the last time you played, like week 2?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
But they activated him before last week's game against the Bucks. He didn't end up playing in that game, but theoretically I think he's going to be back for this game. I mean, if James Houston is able to come back and provide the kind of impact that he provided last year, that's massive for them. Like, okay, it's going to be against Trent Williams. It's not like it's a favorable matchup or anything, but simply having another player that is at least dangerous is huge, because Hutchinson should be able to win his matchup on that side, but they need somebody else to make some kind of impact.
Well, like I said, even if when Hutch wins, there's I'm trying not to be like too anecdotal here, but when Hutch had those games where it's 7 or 8 pressures, if no one's even close to the quarterback,
right,
it doesn't matter a ton, right? If you avoid him, you step up and you make a play. Just having Houston able to even just like track down, like, because he's super fast, right? He's undersized, really fast. Just having him play in the scramble drill, picking up potential cleanup pressure and everything, I think is huge. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on that side of the ball.
Now, Brock Purdy, is he a fraud or is he an MVP? You can only pick one. Because apparently that's the way it works.
Definitely. I mean, we are in this world, right? I don't know if anybody knows this, but at the end of the day, only one team is going to win the Super Bowl.
True.
That's it. One out of 32 teams. And I was joking last week that, you know, after the wild card round, if your team lost, your QB's trash, time to move on from him. That's the clear answer, right? Mm-hmm. Should the Dolphins move on from Tua? Are the Bills ever going to win with Josh Allen? All these things come up when a team loses. And it's like, well, this is going to happen 31 times. So at the end of the season, like if Lamar Jackson wins the Super Bowl, or Patrick Mahomes wins another Super Bowl, are we going to say, well, if Mahomes wins, Ravens can't win with Lamar, what are they going to do? I mean, it's like, yeah, 31 teams are going to lose.
Yeah. I think it's the hardest thing in the NFL to do is figure out what you actually are in a world where 31 of 32 teams fail, quote unquote, every year. Like,
if that's the only goal. I mean, if I do think front offices, listen, we might come at this the same way fans come at it, which is championship or bust. And if it's not there,
yeah, let's assume,
you change everything.
Let's assume for a moment everybody's goal is to win a Super Bowl, which it probably isn't across the board. But a team like Buffalo, right? A team knocking on the door every single year but has yet to even make it to a Super Bowl, let alone win one. How do you determine, do we actually need to get significantly better? Like, are we hitting our head against a glass ceiling that we can control and break with some move here or there if we get a bit more aggressive or if we do something slightly differently? Or have we just been unlucky? Like, is getting to this stage the most important thing? And then eventually you'll win one of these. And that's what like breaks you through the glass ceiling. Like that I think is one of the hardest questions in sports, let alone the NFL. How do we figure out if we've actually reached our ceiling or if everybody loses except one team and we've simply been that team for three or four straight years?
I mean, I don't want to go on too much of a tangent here because I want to stay focused on the Niners and Lions, but Brandon Bean, Bill's GM, and Sean McDermott, you know, they have their end of the year press conferences, and they're at this tipping point where Josh Allen's going to have to get paid a lot more. So Bean was like, hey, this is a huge draft for us. We have 10 draft picks we have to hit in the draft. And so I do think over time, like, I don't think the Bills should be like, man, we just were two plays away from winning. Like, they were literally one or two plays away from beating the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Again. As they were a couple of years ago. Does that mean you go and you focus on those two plays? Well, but we better be better. We need to be better at left tackle and pass protection because that was the play that lost it for us. Pass protection. Or we have to have, I don't know, a better linebacker because we had four injuries there. Like, that's, you have to stay true to the process, which is just continue to put yourself on the green. And one of these days you're going to hit the putt, right? I mean, that has to be how you handle this thing. So all that said, I think Brock Purdy's the guy that keeps putting you on the green for the Niners, combined with a Shanahan who does a great job play calling, combined with these playmakers here. And I will say there is something too when you don't have your best stuff still coming through in crunch time, right? There is this mental aspect of it. And I do think the fact that like an Aaron Rodgers hasn't been as good in fourth quarter comebacks versus other elite quarterbacks historically, like, I do think that stuff matters over time. And I think Purdy has some of that in him, and we saw that last week, not to like completely overrate the one game. So I think overall Purdy has what it takes to like win a Super Bowl for this 49ers team. If that's the question.
Look, I think what he did was more important psychologically than it was tangible evidence of him being Joe Montana. Like, I think there's absolutely something real to what you just outlined. Guys that have the mentality at the end of the game that it doesn't matter what's happened up until this point, I'm going to go and get the win from here. And Montana was maybe the best ever at having that aura. Whether or not, I mean, forget what he believed, but everybody around him believed that Joe Montana was going to lead the comeback, no matter how responsible he was for putting them in that position in the first place, right? Tom Brady, there's a certain element of that as well. He was probably less responsible than Montana at times for digging the hole, but late in the game, Brady has the ball, a minute and a half left on the clock. Everyone is like, there's a feeling of inevitability that he's going to get it done. So Purdy putting that out there, like, I didn't play well this game. I, you know, was poor, not the level I've usually been at, but boom, late in the game, Purdy turns into Montana, leads the drive, wins the game. Huge. I do think that there's at least as much responsibility / culpability in Joe Barry's defense for that drive. Like, 6 minutes left, that defense got way too soft and just kind of gave them the drive. And he executed it, like, he took advantage of it, but it's the same conversation with Mahomes versus the two defenses he placed. Like, how much was that the Chiefs offense stepping up to another level, and how much of that was two defenses that just ran out of bodies? So, same thing. Like, how much of that is Brock Purdy as Joe Montana versus he ran up against a guy whose job has been called for a majority of the season, four drives like that, right? Where the game's on the line, he gets way too soft and he essentially gifts them a drive, right? But my point being, the more important element of that is other people are going to believe it. Like, it happened. It doesn't even matter who's responsible for it. The point is, everybody in that locker room now thinks, or is a little closer to believing, that Brock Purdy in crunch time gets it done, right? Whether or not it was Joe Barry's fault or not, in their brain, the only thing that matters is guy didn't play particularly well this game, and then boom, when it was on the line, he got it done. He'll do it again. That, I think, is the most important thing to come from that game.
Yeah, I mean, we'll continue to live with normal takes here. The other thing I said a couple years ago, too, like, if Mahomes, like, Brady went to, whatever, 10 Super Bowls, you know, pretty much half the years, right?
Yeah.
And Mahomes is on pace to do something similar. Like, if those two guys didn't exist, imagine where the QB takes would be. Because they've been, to this point, so far above everyone else from a production and results standpoint, yeah. Brady and Mahomes, right?
It's just the results. Like, just think for a moment. Peyton Manning won two Super Bowls. That's it. Like that's like if Tom Brady didn't exist, Peyton Manning would be like clear and away the best quarterback that ever played the game, and he only won two rings because repeatedly he had a championship caliber team and he got two or around the game and then it went the other way, right? Like he ran into even when he went to Denver, he had that team was insane for like not just the 1 year they won it, but for 2 or 3 years. And then one of them he ran up against the Seahawks defense when it was a buzzsaw and they got wrecked. Like Brady and Mahomes break everything because everybody else has to live through the Peyton Manning reality where you're going to be there or thereabouts but miss out most of the time.
It wasn't just Peyton. I mean, during Brady's era, you had Drew Brees and you had Aaron Rodgers. Like, you had those guys that couldn't do it either.
He's the most obvious example because if you take away the Brady existence, Peyton Manning is like the most clear greatest quarterback of all time. Like, his numbers are nuts, his longevity, the fact he did it for two different teams. And yet he could only manage two rings despite being sort of clearly the best quarterback in the NFL at the time because it's freaking hard. You don't win them.
And my point was if Brady and Mahomes don't exist and if they're not owning all of the Super Bowl production, you have more Eli Mannings. You have more Joe Flaccos, right? So the QB discourse, you have more Matthew Staffords. We had a Stafford a couple of years ago. Like those were more common, right? There was that stretch where the Patriots weren't just winning every single year, going to the Super Bowl every year. And there was this 10-year stretch where you had a couple Elis and a Flacco and a Russell Wilson. And if you didn't have and I don't even know if everybody knew this at the time, that Brady was, like, in hindsight maybe we knew, but if you didn't have the guy just dominating everything, you'd have more random QB8 going to the Super Bowl, QB6 going to the Super Bowl, QB15 going to the Super Bowl and perhaps winning it. And it doesn't, and it shouldn't massively change what you think about that guy necessarily, right? So again, if Brock Purdy, if they lose this week, it doesn't mean like the Niners should be looking for the next quarterback or anything, you know? It's just, they lost. They're one of the other 31 teams that lost. Anyway, Purdy is what he is. He's like, he's a good quarterback and he's still young and he still could get better and he executes the offense really well and he didn't play a good game last week. Yeah. All that stuff's true.
Which may well have been entirely down to the fact that it was raining. Maybe. Like, that's now two games where he's not been able to play well in the rain.
I think he'll play better this week in clearer weather, at Candlestick, as right. I said this week, Candlestick. Clear weather and against a defense that, like, going up against the Packers and the Lions defenses for your two games on the way to the Super Bowl, not the worst draw in the world for the 49ers. So I think the Niners are going to put points up on the board, and to me it's going to be on the Lions to keep pace. Goff's got to play a clean game. Ben Johnson needs to be in his bag for a couple. You need one of the yoink plays. You need a good yoink play. You call it the yoink leak, tight end leak. You need a couple of those, right? They had the Brock Wright play last week. They did sign Zach Ertz as a tight end insurance this week. But that's what it's going to take for the Lions.
I mean, look, last week shouldn't have changed much in the perspective of, like, what is Brock Purdy? And yet, apparently, it changed everything for everybody. But
it's just because everybody has to have a take on Monday morning.
But
it can't be a lukewarm one.
Heading into that game, the two best graded quarterbacks in the NFL since in the second half of the season, week 9 onwards, were Jordan Love and Brock Purdy. And that was despite Brock Purdy having that Baltimore game in there where the whole thing went away from them. The narrative was Brock Purdy played terribly, even though it was more other things. Even after that game, Purdy is still third. Like, he just drops behind Justin Herbert, who, remember, missed most of that time with injury, so it's not a full sample size for him. But Brock Purdy is still, like, the second best graded quarterback in the NFL since in the second half of the season, and that includes a Baltimore game where they got beat down as a team, and it includes last week where he didn't play well in the rain. Like, he's been not just good, he's been exceptionally good this season, albeit in an offense that we know turbocharges quarterback performance and is definitely aided by Debo and Brandon Ayuk and Kittle and all those kinds of things. So I think it would be a mistake to, like, underestimate what Brock Purdy is capable of in this game simply because he's coming off not a particularly good performance.
Got to have a strong take on Brock Purdy. Got to have it. Joe Montana or trash and replaceable. Anyway, I think a lot of this comes down to Shanahan and Campbell. Shanahan's always been on the conservative end of some of those fourth down decisions. and, you know, Dan Campbell's the other end. Doesn't matter. We're at the seven. We're going for two.
YOLO.
I just, when Dan Campbell went for two from the seven to win, I was like, I need to see this guy in a Super Bowl. Because he's going to make some decision that will go down in Super Bowl lore. Like Dan Campbell onside kicks three straight times or something like that in the Super Bowl, right? Like Sean Payton's surprise onside to help beat the Colts. Something special would happen there.
Oh, another piece of misinformation we can correct is apparently that fourth down fake punt that the Bills ran last week was called from the sideline.
That was a call.
It wasn't a reaction or an automatic, you know, you get the look, you take the play. They called that and apparently just lucked into the fact that the Chiefs only had 10 guys on the field.
Yeah.
They didn't like take advantage of that. They were just like, we're going to run a surprise fake now. It feels like the time, you know, to catch them by the element of surprise. Then lucked into 10 guys on defense and still didn't get the play successful. So, yeah. I mean, just you only reminded me of that with your talk of crazy random ass plays that get called in big situations.
Yeah. They were the underdog at that point. They were down. They tried something.
I mean, it's
I'd still probably rather line up with Josh Allen to do it, but I get it.
Yeah. And apparently, I mean, when you consider the fact that they really did luck into we're only facing against 10 guys and we actually have the look, we have the numbers.
It looked, the execution on it was so awkward and horrible. And I guess Drake, somebody was mic'd up like calling it out to the Niners.
Like you can debate whether the call was good or not. Then when you factor in they got the look also, they wanted, it becomes the right call and then they just didn't execute it.
Given my experience is not like on an NFL sideline, but on a football sideline, every time a team lines up for a punt, you hear watch fake, right? It's like, well, yes, they could fake it or they could punt it. There's two options. Hmm. So the idea that someone was like calling out the fake, unless it was specific, like, hey, watch, he's going to run it or watch direct snap. But like yelling out watch fake, it's like, that's not really all that helpful. Anyway, so I don't know if somebody actually called it out for the Niners. Do you want to make some picks or do you have anything else Chiefs. To add to this?
Okay.
Chiefs.
Make Chiefs.
Whatever.
Make picks rather.
49ers by seven here.
Lions.
Oh, I'm picking the Lions as well.
Covering but losing.
To at least cover. So you're saying Niners and Ravens just as the NFL intended.
Yeah, sadly.
I mean, based off
sadly,
the colors
it
of
is
the
best
Super Bowl.
Matchup, but it is a bit disappointing that it's by the book.
The Super Bowl logo.
Mm.
The colors of the logo. It's destined.
Yeah.
Destiny. Except the Chiefs are going to have the ref in their favor.
Stop it. Talk about misinformation. Like, we're not promoting that level of horseshit on the podcast.
All right, won't do it. We're not doing it. We won't do it. Anyway, good show. So tomorrow we're going to talk a little draft. That was great. Let's recap here. You and I are both taking the underdogs, the Chiefs and the Lions to cover.
Yes.
But expecting a Ravens 49ers Super Bowl.
Correct.
So we're expecting an epic conference championship weekend here.
Yeah. I guess the only one that wouldn't, I mean, it's kind of boring if the Chiefs make the Super Bowl again, unless you're a Chiefs fan. It's vaguely boring if Baltimore does because they're the favorite. It's boring if San Francisco does because they're also the favorite. Basically, we need a Lions versus somebody Super Bowl for it to be like a story.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just, eh.
Remember, the Ravens waxed both of those teams in the NFC too.
I mean, a Lions-Ravens Super Bowl. Now the Lions because it's the best story, and the Ravens because
they
the Jimmy's
by 30.
Doesn't matter. The Ravens, Jimmy's people will be bringing crab to the Super Bowl.
True.
So that's the game we need.
We need Jimmy's to have food. If the Ravens win, when Jimmy's needs to have food on our table.
Yes.
On Radio Row every day. I want it. I want fresh crab cakes for all of our shows. Can we pull that off?
I mean, it depends if Baltimore makes it.
If enough people order Jimmy's and get free shipping,
I guess
maybe
that
they would be like, hey, you guys can have whatever you want because you got free. You know, all the people from the PFF NFL podcast used promo code PFF NFL pod and got free shipping.
Either the Ravens make the Super Bowl and they bring a whole bunch of that stuff to Vegas, or we have enough people buy the awesome crab that they're willing to give it to us as a thank you. I mean, either one of those two things.
Yeah. If it's Lions-Ravens, I think, because I do read the comments, I think those are the teams that we hashtag disrespected the most this year.
No, Steelers.
I could tell you, I could say Lamar Jackson is MVP, and there'll be people in the comments saying that we disrespected Lamar Jackson for not saying he's the unanimous MVP or something to that effect.
Clearly, we have disrespected the Steelers more than any team for the fifth straight year now.
Yeah. For the fifth straight year.
Right.
It's the Steelers.
Now, part of that is because if you say Myles Garrett is good, that's disrespecting the Steelers.
That is their Super Bowl.
Right.
The Defensive Player of the Year award is Steelers fan Super Bowl right now.
Yes.
That is where they are.
Which is unfortunate because I suspect it's going to go to Myles Garrett, even if apparently some random award that I'd never heard of gave it to TJ Watt.
They did. Eat it, PFF.
Okay. It hasn't happened yet, but the reports are that Jim Harbaugh is going to sign as head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. What I suggest we do, right, is you do your reset for social and we just pretend it's happened and we analyze it as if it has. And then when it happens, we can cut that up and it's like, look, live instant reaction that we did a few hours ago.
That's genius.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. All right, let's do that for social. Before we do that, just remind everybody that you can get 30% off PFF products right now. 30MDS is the promo code, 30MDS. Type that in, you get 30% off PFF subscriptions. MDS, of course, stands for our mock draft simulator. It's hot this time of year. So hot right now. Go use the mock draft simulator.
So hot.
And you get extra perks with the subscription for the mock draft simulator. You're going to need it because it's draft season for a lot of us. So 30MDS, go do that right now. Now we're going to reset for social. Ready, Zach and everybody? Boom, reset. Jim Harbaugh to the Los Angeles Chargers, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
One of the biggest dominoes to fall in terms of coaching hires this offseason. All for seeing Harbaugh back in the NFL and him going to the Chargers, who have obviously the clearest sort of established star quarterback in Justin Herbert. I mean, it's got to be fun, right?
Yeah, I'm interested in this stylistically, right? The last time we saw Jim Harbaugh, he was obviously the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. He had, I believe it was near instant success.
Yeah.
With the 49ers. Right?
I mean, his resume is pretty crazy. He's had success and fairly instant sustained success everywhere he's gone.
Took a little bit in Michigan.
At multiple levels. Right. But even in Michigan, he ends up, you know, crowning it with a national championship. But he'd put up like some of the most absurd statistics you're ever going to see in the world ever with Josh Johnson back in San Diego when he first started. Like, his resume is pretty crazy.
And so he turned Stanford from just nothing, a laughing stock, into a competitive team. He turned the Niners, who were at a really bad spot, into a team that went to the Super Bowl, of course, lost to his brother in the Super Bowl. And the Niners almost instantly turned around. And like you said, Michigan goes from just years of mediocrity to in the college football playoff and then finally winning the national championship. So, of course, going to the division with the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, I'm always interested in the hires and what they're going to do stylistically and how you combat that, because you're always going to be the underdog here, I think, for as long as Mahomes and Andy Reid are together. So you're the underdog. You do have a Justin Herbert, but Jim Harbaugh's forte has been running the ball and trying to play good defense and has not been the forte of the Chargers. They have not run the ball effectively. They have not stopped the run. They've been a very inconsistent defense over the last few years. Interested to see how he puts his stamp on things, with Herbert, of course, being the key there.
That's the thing. Remember, we were so excited by what Brandon Staley could bring to the Chargers defense because they had incredible talent. And at the time they hired him, he was fresh off running the number one defense in the NFL with the scheme that was currently, you know, the most popular scheme in the NFL. You're like, this is a perfect matchup. Well, okay, it didn't work out. Now, Jim Harbaugh, the reports have been that he's going to be bringing significant pieces of his Michigan staff to the Chargers, including Jesse Minter, the defensive coordinator there. I mean, if he's able, the Michigan defense has been nasty. If they're able to bring that kind of defense or that kind of defensive success to that group that still remains talented, that still has a ton of really good playmakers, and actually get the potential out of that Chargers defensive unit, in addition to having Justin Herbert on the other side of the ball, I mean, that is a recipe for success.
So we'll have a preview of that, right? Mahomes and the Ravens this weekend going up against that similar scheme. And, you know, is that – that's also the scheme that has slowed down, for whatever it's worth, if that matters, slowed down the Shanahan offense. The Shanahan offense that has three quarterbacks leading the league in yards per attempt this year in Brock Purdy, Tua, and C.J. Stroud. So that might be the right recipe for the NFL. In addition to – we always talk about – hires, coaching hires, as like, well, this is the hot offensive coordinator or the hot defensive coordinator. Jim Harbaugh is the CEO type. He's not necessarily bringing a scheme. He's bringing a culture. He's bringing a style. He wants to have 15 tight ends on the field, and he does want to run the ball. And so, but at the same time, he's bringing CEO, head coach type of experience. So I think it's a fascinating hire. I like it for the Chargers. I'm interested to see what they do offensively. If they do go heavy tight ends, run the ball, and maybe they take a little pressure off Herbert. He's been a high volume, throw the ball underneath type of quarterback to this point. Does this make him morph into heavy personnel, downfield passer a little bit more? Because we know Herbert can do that. We always talk about his field flipping ability with his arm. That actually might mesh with what Harbaugh wants to do offensively. And it might also mesh with what the Chargers have as far as an aging Mike Williams, an aging Keenan Allen. Don't need as many receivers. Just get a couple deep threats and, you know, start stretching the field.
And then the missing piece of the puzzle becomes, what do the Chargers do at general manager? Because, you know, one of the reasons you're going to get the gig?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well,
I can work with Jim.
I imagine you could.
I can get Jim to buy into the model. I've got...
You got laminated sheets.
I got some results here.
Oh, that's not laminated.
Can't see it. It's a model results. Like, if you want a receiver, this is my receiver page.
Yeah.
I can improve your hit rate.
So one of the reasons...
Double in the second... I can double your hit rate in the second round and the third round.
Right. One of the reasons it broke down in San Francisco was apparently Harbaugh and Trent Baalke, you know, couldn't get on the same page consistently. Like, I don't... I assume they're still going to be hiring a general manager and they're not giving total control to Harbaugh, but that general manager is now going to have to come in and, you know, be capable of working with him and maybe be willing to defer to him to a degree, in a way that apparently Baalke wasn't. So that becomes the next focus now, is who the Chargers hire at GM, or how much of a puppet is Steve willing to be?
For millions?
Yeah. Total puppet.
I was gonna use a graphic description of what happens to a puppet, but I was gonna say, for millions,
yeah,
I'll be your puppet.
What type of puppet would you be?
The one from Mr. Rogers, King Friday. Be like King Friday. What do you mean? What kind? What kind of puppets are
there? Well, there's the ones on the strings, you know, where like the puppet master.
Or no, I'd be too awkward.
Or there's like a hand up the back puppet.
That was what I was gonna say earlier. Yeah. I was like, you could. Stick your hand up my back for millions. I'll be your mouthpiece puppet for sure.
So we're envisaging now a dynamic where Jim Harbaugh's hand is elbow deep up Steve, making the puppet controls work.
Yeah, and if things don't work, the real goal is to get fired after year one.
Go home. I would imagine if things don't work, the real goal is to have his hand removed from being elbow deep.
Yeah, whatever.
Up wherever it's up.
Whatever. The real dream is a 4-year contract. Fired after 1 year, come back to the podcast, spend time with the kids, right?
Right.
Feel pretty good about the bank.
Time
account.
On the beach.
That's the goal. Not that's bad for the interview. I'll be interviewing.
No, you don't tell them that.
No,
obviously.
No.
Right.
They don't listen. The owners aren't listening to this, right?
Oh, what if that's part of your background check? You know, there's like AI that can scrape the podcast and stuff and like repeat back to them a little.
So when I send in my resume and everything, I will send in clips of fixing every team in 5 minutes.
Yes.
This is what I'll probably send full episodes and just probably, say, I've got a plan.
I mean, I would find the ones where we got it right.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
That's right.
Rather than, you know, here's
not
how
the
I
ones
fixed.
Like, sign Ali Villanueva right. And Will Fuller over
here's
and over
how
again.
I fixed a team that did exactly what we told them to do and it went terribly.
Yeah. Are we done here today?
Yeah.
Do we need a social can cut that at the right time? Mm. Do we need a... special conclusion for the Jim Harbaugh segment?
No, I don't think so. Brandon Katz in the chat says, Sam and Steve are significantly overrating Harbaugh's time in San Francisco. He had the best roster in the NFL, and he beat up on bad NFC teams. He struggled in big games, and his time in San Francisco was overrated.
What was his first year? Was it 09? Because I think when Mike Singletary was there, remember, they were a train wreck.
Yeah.
And yeah, like if they... Yeah, they had good players. They had that 1 year.
It's worth pointing out that his quarterbacks were Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick. I mean, it's not
there was that too. Alex Smith turned a corner in 2011, middle of 2011.
Alex Smith, when he arrived, was like gone. I mean, they were like, dude, it's time. We need to get you the hell out of the building.
Year five, and he was a bust.
Disaster.
He was not a good first overall pick.
Right.
Alex Smith started playing good football.
Pretty good football.
Good football in 2011 and most of 2012. And then Harbaugh made the move and said, actually, we're going to upgrade with Colin Kaepernick because he's going to add the running component to it. And then that, you know, Alex Smith converted all that into this contract with the Chiefs. And that was actually a turning point in Alex Smith's career because he played pretty well with the Chiefs as well.
Yeah.
But Harbaugh was the first.
Rescued him.
Yes. Harbaugh was a part of that. They did have a defense that was like, they never subbed. They were 13 deep, right? Justin Smith, and they, you know, drafted Alden Smith. Like, I know, I remember all that stuff. They did have, I mean, they had a good team. That's fine. But, again, how much was Harbaugh involved in personnel?
Yeah.
With Trent Baalke there? How much was he involved in adding some of those
players? He did make a discernible difference, like, pre and post Harbaugh is fairly obvious with that franchise.
Then they went, Jim Tomsula? Was it Tomsula right after him, or was it Chip Kelly right after Harbaugh? The transition after that was not smooth.
Right.
I think Tomsula and Kelly each got a year. I don't know if that was directly after Harbaugh, but it was close.
Let's find out what Wikipedia says. 49ers coaches by season.
He finished in 14, and then Tomsula 15, and then Kelly 16.
And then Shanahan.
And then Shanahan. Right? So the transition after that took a few years.
Yeah.
After Harbaugh. So
I mean, Tomsula went 5-11.
See, I remember stuff.
Chip Kelly went 2-14.
And this I got you, Brandon.
This was fresh off Harbaugh.
Delanie
being
Walker
really
was
good.
The backup tight end. He was awesome. I know. They had a good squad.
That was after Singletary had been under 500. Then Tomsula was exactly 500. Oh, no. He had one. He won one game as an interim. And then Harbaugh comes in.
Well, guess what? I know he's not a friend of the show, but soon maybe he will be. Tom Telesco.
Oh.
Maybe taking some heat. He just got the job for the Raiders. But there's a reason. And look, say what you want about what Telesco's done with the Chargers. There's a reason why everybody in the media hypes them up every year. It's because when you look at the roster, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's led by a good quarterback. So the reason why the Chargers are always hyped up is because you go up and down the roster, you say you got good players there. You got a pretty good offensive line now. You got pretty good pass catchers. You got some stars on defense. Okay, you got good players. So he's stepping in to good players here. And then he's got to, you know, put his stamp on it. And maybe where Harbaugh's strengths are, toughness, run game, defense, that's going to fill a gap where the Chargers' weaknesses have been. So that's where I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, Brad was pointing out on Twitter when they made that hiring that it sort of bucks the trend of second time around GMs. Like there haven't been many of those hired recently, and certainly not like immediately after getting fired the first time around. But then Moton on Twitter pointed out Raiders GMs since 2011, which 2011 is presumably the Mark Davis transfer point, right? Or something like that. Hugh Jackson, de facto first-time GM. Reggie McKenzie, first-time GM. Mike Mayock, first-time GM. Dave Ziegler, first-time GM. And now Tom Telesco, 11 years of experience as being a GM. So I think if you're the Raiders or a Raiders fan looking at this and going, at least Mark Davis is trying not to make the same mistake he's made four times consecutively. Yeah. Like, he's trying to do something different, and whether
mix
or not
up experience,
and whether or not it's the right call. And I think, I mean, the same thing with Antonio Pierce, right? Like, everyone wanted you to hire Rich Bisaccia. You went in a different direction. That was a train wreck. So at least he's not trying to just make the same mistake again. Whether or not it works out, I think you have to give him credit for trying to learn from past screw ups.
Yeah, I agree. There's also, I'll just say this. It would be interesting to see what Harbaugh can pull off with the Chargers. We work with every team. There are certain limitations some teams have that others don't. Financially, right? The Chargers might have some more limitations than other teams. So from a Harbaugh perspective, can he break through some of that? And from a Telesco perspective, will he have a little bit more at his disposal with Mark Davis and the Raiders?
And also,
I'm trying to say this.
Right. But also simply the fact that they're hiring Harbaugh suggests that the limitations aren't that great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
The man was on like $8.8 million a year at Michigan or whatever. So presumably he's now getting paid more than that. You've got money to spend. it's not like the cupboard is bare here.
Drake in the chat does ask if the model's real or if it's just
a
thing.
It's real and it's beautiful.
I just want to say if I get my consulting gig with one or more teams, I will probably have to no longer reference the model.
Wow.
But it is real.
I will say
it's real and it's spectacular.
I feel like that's a slap in the face to all of our loyal listeners. They want to hear what the model says, and you're out here.
I would have to pivot to
shilling to big NFL.
I would have to pivot to merely giving my film takes And there are times where the data says yes, and my heart is saying no, or vice versa. My heart's saying yes, but the data's saying, no way, man. Don't do it. Don't trust it. So I would have to lean on my heart in the film study because this preliminary big board here.
I just feel like that makes you a disappointing seller.
I hope nobody can zoom in and see this. Like the Cowboys.
We're in 4K.
This is like the Cowboys draft board that gets leaked every year.
What if people, what if our listeners were willing to crowdsource and like crowdfund the model? Our listeners could be the consultant or the consultancy, service.
I mean, if you would, I just want like, if we get up to like 50 grand or something, I would.
50 grand, huh?
I would give you access to the model.
All individually? Is, like one person?
No, as a group.
Oh, okay.
I would make that. No, 100 grand, we can make it exclusive to the podcast.
Okay.
50, we'll think about like, I'll give you like the defense or something.
Well, there you go. There's something to try and organize if you're that interested in the model. If you guys want to crowdfund
In the Discord. Because I do think there is data to be used to improve your hit rate on players. And not just starters.
Yeah.
That works too. But actually finding good players.
And that's worth just underlying as maybe the final point in this 9-hour marathon podcast for two games. It's improving your hit rate. It's not getting every pick right, because that will never happen for anybody in any system with any form of knowledge. It's simply moving the percentages in your direction.
Yes.
To try and beat the game.
And if you do that over time, you'll start winning. And like the tweet that I put out there yesterday, highest non-QB war added since 2015, as I was looking at the history of the draft. The Chiefs are number one. And look at this top five list. Chiefs, Cowboys, Ravens, 49ers, and Saints. Three out of those teams are playing this weekend. They're three of the four remaining teams. Those are the teams that have added, just from the players that they've drafted, not even all this war on their team, whatever. Those are the teams that have drafted the most non-quarterback war since 2015. And three of them are playing this weekend.
I also know, I don't know what the, what were the teams again?
Chiefs,
yep.
Cowboys, Ravens, 49ers, and Saints.
Okay, well, the Chiefs and the Cowboys are 1-2 in terms of just wins since 2021,
yeah,
the last few years. So you're talking about some of the most successful teams in that period as well, in addition to just this year.
This is what I'm trying to say, and I've got, you know, some connections around the league, and I'm trying to explain to, you know, event pending general managers and, you know, front office personnel or currents that might be listening. The QB war metric, the war metric for PFF is actually really good at pointing toward wins. And you might be able to look into the data, find ways to hit on high war players a little bit more and add wins to your team and maybe be playing on championship weekend. That's all I'm saying. Because the teams that are lowest are the Texans, Cardinals, Giants, Raiders, and Panthers. Those are the lowest teams since 2015. The Texans are overcoming it this year because of Stroud, and they have gotten better. But those teams haven't won a ton of games. So there is some signal here, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got it.
Yeah.
That was fun. Good show. Good stuff. So tomorrow we're going to do about an hour on the Senior Bowl. Senior Bowl's next week. I will be out there campaigning for a GM job. I'll be out there at the Senior Bowl. It'll be Senior Bowl practice. They'll have the game a week from this Saturday. So we'll have Jim Nagy, head of the Senior Bowl, here to start a little Senior Bowl preview, talk draft prospects, which we love doing here.
Mm-hmm.
I will not refer to the model at all tomorrow with Nagy. Wow. Just going to ask. Just going to be film discussion.
I think that's disappointing.
All right. That's it for us today. Go get your Jimmy Seafood. Go vote for us. Vote for us to win it all. Please win. We got to win. We want to win the award. Link in the description. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll be again here again tomorrow. Talking Senior Bowl with Jim Nagy.
The longest outro ever.
Don't worry about it. It's a good outro.
Got it.
Good outro. Nailed it.